Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. It's Friday, September the 19th. Coming up, a Kent head teacher hits out at content pupils are seeing on social media. It's the final salute to the 40s at the historic dockyard, and can Gillingham make it a record-breaking weekend? But first, Kent County Council have backtracked on a pledge to treat climate change as an emergency. An official declaration was made back in 2019, but now a Reform UK councillor has led a motion to scrap the statement, describing the science behind global warming as nonsense. Despite a protest outside County Hall in Maidstone, where the meeting was taking place, the motion was voted through by 50 votes to 21 with 3 abstentions. Opposition parties say the move is reckless and wrong. First, let's hear from KCC leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron.
People voted for Reform UK in overwhelmingly large numbers in May because they wanted an administration to do things differently from the past administration that was here for nearly 30 years. So we came in on a mandate to do things differently, to tear up the old rule book, start again, and see if we can offer better value for money for the taxpayer, to see if we can still protect the environment and do all the sensible things, but not be hysterical about it, you know, be sensible, be the grown-ups in the room.
During a debate on the issue, the council's cabinet member for local government efficiency said the climate emergency had cost the authority between £7 and £10 million over the years. Well, we've also been getting reaction from Green Party councillor Mark Hood.
This element, net zero, actually works for the council. We save money because we've got fewer costs, energy costs. We work with more efficient buildings now. We've got two solar farms which power the whole of Kent's streetlights. This is a nonsense and a distraction, and it's not supported by the science.
They were both speaking to reporter Ollie Leader from the Local Democracy Reporting Service. You can let us know what you think of this decision by commenting on the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and an inmate who walked out of an open prison on Sheppey before kidnapping a woman and threatening a supermarket shopper has been sent back to jail. Jamie Herbert was coming to the end of a 6-year sentence when he left Stamford Hill and carried out the crimes in January. The 56-year-old career criminal, who has 22 convictions to his name, has been locked up for 10 years and 9 months. A suspect in the stabbing murder of a delivery driver in Gravesend is still on the run. Police were called to a disturbance involving a group of people outside a home in Augustine Road in August. A Latvian national was injured and died the following day. Police say the alleged perpetrator remains at large and the murder weapon hasn't been found. Bosses in Medway say they're putting in extra safety measures following a blaze at a former Debenham store in Chatham. 7 fire engines were called to New Road just before 5:30 earlier this week. The store's been empty since 2020, with plans to convert the site into housing and a new medical unit. Next today, a Kent head teacher says children are being traumatised by content they're seeing online. Damian Macbeth banned children from having phones in class last year, with pupils having to lock them away in special pouches. But the head of the John Wallace Academy in Ashford is now backing a national campaign calling for the digital age of consent to be raised to 16. I've been speaking to Damian about why he's supporting the campaign.
It's a world that children are having to navigate, which was designed to be addictive, which was designed to ensure it takes so much of their time. And what we're seeing in school is that children are arriving exhausted. They are up all night being fed scrolls of content through algorithms that are designed to keep their attention.
How difficult would that be to police, though? Is the genie not out of the bottle, Damien? How would we manage to do that?
I think with all things, the argument that the genie is out of the bottle is one that we must tackle head on, because actually we weren't aware 10 years ago of the impact of that social media would have. But if we just talk about this weekend, I've had lots of conversations with students about what happened over in America this weekend. And nearly every single student in the academy I speak to has seen some horrific footage, whether they chose to look for it or not. It's pumped through the algorithm. Children are seeing things that they should not be seeing at a young age. So I don't think this will be an easy thing to implement, but just because it's not easy doesn't mean it's not right. And actually, what we need to do is prioritize children, prioritize their safety and their well-being over the profits that these big tech companies are making. And I think that's what we're asking the government to do, is to put children first and to prioritize childhood.
You mentioned the images that some of the students saw over the weekend. I'm very aware of that because my 16-year-old daughter also saw it without searching for it or wanting to see it. How do you think that sort of thing is impacting young people? Are they becoming almost desensitized to these things?
Yeah, it's normalizing disturbing content, and these things are not normal, and we should make sure that we are standing up to protect children, because that's ultimately what we're calling for. We are calling for the government to put children in front of the money that you can make from big tech. And I understand the pull of the technology industry, because it's very attractive and it glows and it's shiny. But actually, putting children first and standing up to say it's not okay for a child to see somebody assassinated, whether they go looking for it or not, this is the content that is being pushed to our children. And we have to be strong. We have to stand up and say, this is not normal, this is not okay, and we're not willing to put up with it.
Have any students come to you and said that they were affected by it at all?
We are managing it through conversations with safeguarding team, through the pastoral team. There's lots of students who are responding in different ways. I think some children react in a way where they try to show bravado in front of their friends. Others will quietly not speak to anybody about it. And that's where, as a school, we have to navigate things that don't just happen inside the school, but beyond the school gates. And it's another reason why raising the age to 16 is giving children that opportunity to be children when they are younger. And then when they are older, when they get to the age of 16, then they can start to explore social media. Then they can start to explore these technologies. But certainly at a young age, when children are trying to create a sense of identity, trying to find out who they are, they don't need algorithms pushing content their way, whether they want to see it or not.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses at a gallery in Canterbury have defended displaying a print of Batman and Superman embracing, following claims it could morally corrupt children. The artwork is in the window of Castle Fine Art in the City, but a letter sent to the company by a dad criticises the sexualisation of the superheroes. The MD says many copies have been sold and the art is intended to reflect the diversity of human relationship. Anti-immigration protesters are set to rally in Kent this weekend. Demonstrators will march through Canterbury to Connor's House in Craddock Road, a facility currently being used to house asylum-seeking children. A counter-demonstration is also due to take place. Well, I've been speaking to reporter Dan Essen, who's been covering similar protests across the county. He started by telling me where the demo was due to get underway.
They're set to meet at Westgate Towers at the bottom of the High Street at about 10 in the morning, and say they're going to march from there to Connor's House, which is a former care home on Craddock Road, which is closed as a care home a few years ago and is now used to house unaccompanied asylum-seeking children by Kent County Council.
And a counter-demonstration also due to happen roughly around the same time.
Yeah, organisations like the local branch of Stand Up to Racism and other sort of left-wing organisations are rallying people for a counter-demonstration. They're meeting about 10:30, they say, outside the outside Craddock House itself, you know, with the view to not allowing the anti-immigration protesters to reach there. But also, of course, I imagine there'll be a very heavy police presence in town as well.
Obviously, when these things are organised, as you say, the vast majority of it done on social media, you don't really know how many people are going to turn up. But what's the kind of vibe? What are you hearing?
If I had to guess, I wouldn't imagine it would be much bigger than the one in Faversham a couple of weeks ago, which by my reckoning when I was there was maybe a couple hundred people on the anti-immigration side and outnumbered by maybe about 50% by counter-protesters. But it's, you know, it's almost impossible to tell. And Canterbury in particular, I would imagine that the counter protests will probably be significantly larger, because it you know, probably the only place in Kent with a relatively high density of quite politicised left-wing activists and that kind of thing, the kind of people who are motivated to attend this sort of thing.
What have authorities said to you?
I've not heard much from the council, but I have heard from the police that, you know, they're aware of the protests. They have been for some time, and basically they intend to have a significant presence out to keep things peaceful, to try and minimise disruption to the public and basically to try and prevent clashes between opposing sides, as is, you know, the police's job at pretty much all protests.
Meantime, people living in Faversham are planning to deflag their town as tensions rise over immigration. The so-called community clean-up will see dozens of St George crosses taken down this weekend, and a hotel in Sittingbourne has denied claims they're going to house asylum seekers. The rumours about the Holiday Inn on London Road were shared on social media. Bosses say the allegations are damaging and explain that they're open for anyone wanting to stay.
Kent Online reports.
This is one of our most read stories on the website today. An organisation set up to champion businesses in Kent and Medway has gone into liquidation. Locating Kent has supported more than 1,000 companies over the last 25 years in industries including food and drink, tourism and manufacturing. Bosses have blamed financial pressures. It comes just 2 weeks after Visit Kent also went under. A person's been checked over by paramedics following a fire in a kitchen on Romney Marsh. Crews were called to tackle the blaze in Lydd yesterday afternoon. It's thought to have started accidentally after a pan caught alight. Now, the final Salute to the 40s event will take place at the historic Dockyard in Chatham this weekend. The retro festival is expected to attract thousands of visitors, but this will be the very last one. I've been chatting to Tamazin Jarrett, who's the events manager at the Dockyard.
The event's been running for 18 years, and this is the final salute. So we're going to give this particular show, it's going to go out with a bit of a bang. We've got three areas with live performances. So we've got the main stage on Museum Square, and the Matador Square, Matador stage on the helipad, and we have entertainment on our village green as well. So there's a lot of kind of live performances across the site, and we're headlined with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, the D-Day Darlings, and Randolph Matthews and the New Seasons Band. So that's going to be a real treat. And then we have lots and lots of reenactors that join us for the weekend in their amazing costumes and really embracing the 40s. So we have the US Navy Shore Patrol, the Royal Naval Coast Watch, War and Police with their vintage fires, and then a vintage fire station as well. So there's a lot of kind of animation that goes on across the site, which is really a real kind of feast for the eyes. And not forgetting the military vehicles and vintage vehicles that we also have. So I think we're set for a bit of a bumper year on vehicles this year as well.
Does it make it even more poignant that this year coincides with the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II as well?
Absolutely, yeah. And as I said, the event is 18 years old, and we felt that this was a good year to really sort of go out with a bit of a bang, as it's VE and VJ 80. So we do have some elements of the show that will be certainly paying our respects to those that fought in World War II. We have the Threads of Remembrance installation on HMS Cavalier, which is absolutely stunning. We were aiming for 11,000 poppies, but I think we've ended up with 20,000 poppies, which is just incredible as an installation.
Why was the decision made to finish Salute to the 40s then after an 18-year run? Why was that decision taken?
Well, I think you'd agree 18 years for any event is very good going. And, you know, during that time, lots and lots of people have enjoyed and sort of come and celebrated with us. But sadly, the visitor numbers have never kind of recovered since pre-COVID times. So we have struggled since COVID to get back to the same visitor numbers that we were experiencing back, you know, before 2020. So, yeah, I think we have to make a decision that actually we're seeing that decline. BJ80 sort of makes a natural kind of time to bow out And thank all those that have supported the event over all of that time.
Kent Online News.
A series of events celebrating Romney Marsh gets underway today. The Magic of the Marsh is designed to highlight its unique landscape and wildlife along with the people who live there. It'll include guided walks, cycle rides and volunteer sessions until October the 5th. A flypast has taken place over the National Memorial to the Few in Kent. It was due to happen on Monday, which marked the 85th anniversary of the Battle of Britain, but had to be postponed because of strong winds. Two Spitfires and a Hurricane were among the aircraft to head over the memorial at Capel Le Fern. The University of Kent has come eighth in a new list of the best in the South East and has ranked 56th in the whole country. The Good University Guide by the Times and Sunday Times has been published just weeks after it was confirmed a merger with Greenwich Uni is going to take place. Top overall in the region is Oxford, followed by Southampton. And hundreds of people will be taking part in a fundraising walk for a hospice charity in Gravesend this evening. Eleanor's annual Twilight Walk starts and ends at St George's C of E School with an 8 kilometre route around the town. Now, the aim is to raise vital funds to keep services going for people who need end-of-life care. KMFM breakfast presenter Noomi Gilder from our sister radio station will be among those doing the walk, and she's been chatting to Dr. Suman Sahar, who's a consultant in palliative medicine at Eleanor.
The idea is that we sort of, in effect, put our arm around the patient and family and loved ones and provide that support at what is perhaps their most difficult time of life. My role is a very privileged one as a medical consultant, so I'm one of the leads of the medical team. We are concentrated mainly on the ward, but I also look after patients at home in the community. So I've done a visit today. And it's a joyous place in which to work. And it's one of the few jobs I've done over the years, and I've been qualified now 25 years, so I'm a bit long in the tooth, where I've genuinely enjoyed pretty much every day of my work. It's been it's a pleasure to see people smile despite going through what can only be described as hell, really. And certainly for me it would be, but people come through that. People are really tough, and it's a great community spirit that we have here. So I'm chuffed to be part of it.
The charity also provides ongoing support for people who've lost loved ones. Noomi's spoken to Peter Price, whose wife Gail passed away in Eleanor's care last year.
I have got nothing but praise for how she was treated with so much love and compassion. I found my experience of the Eleanor, the nurses, all of the staff, the volunteers were wonderful. Not just to Gail, but
to
me, my family. Now I'm treated, somebody's very special. I said that I'm treated almost like royalty when I come in here. Everybody knows me. I had a wonderful experience of counselling with the Eleanor. I felt I needed it. After Gail passed away, that was offered to me. It was 12 weeks of counselling. I had a wonderful relationship with the counsellor, and it certainly made me so much more positive about going forward in life without my lovely Gail.
Now, it costs a total of £9.6 million a year to run Eleanor's services, and volunteers are hoping tonight's event will help contribute to that. Harry Sutton is the charity's fundraising officer. He's been telling Noomi how he first got involved with the walk back in 2013.
It was myself and about 25 family members.
Wow!
So there was quite a lot of us, and we did it in memory of my granddad, who sadly passed in the June. So that September, we wanted to do something to celebrate his life, and
remember
him by.
And what was the vibe like that first time, and what made you now become an employee of Eleanor?
Of
that
course,
journey,
of course. So the vibe on the night itself was incredible. Like, it's so magical. Like, everyone's in their orange tops and they're like, they've got their boppers on, and the atmosphere on the night is so exciting, so fun. Everyone's cheering each other on. So especially if you've never done anything like this before, like I'd never had before, like ever done any like walking or any type of event like this. It was so nice being motivated by everyone else. And they're like, come on, you can do this, you've got this. And especially all the cars driving past as well, they would like bimp their horns and like encourage you to keep going. But it was really, really fun. And then I kind of got into the fundraising side of it because of my granddad. And then that led me to being employed by LNR.
We hope you all have a fantastic evening tonight and keep listening to our sister radio station for more details on how much money was raised.
Kent Online Sport.
Football first up, and Gillingham have the chance to break a club record this weekend. They're currently 20 games unbeaten in League Two. A win or draw at Newport County tomorrow would make it the longest run without a defeat in the side's history. First, let's hear from manager Gareth Ainsworth.
Other people might say it's not something we've looked at and that, and maybe some of the players haven't looked at it. I've looked at it and said, you know what, it would be nice to do that, you know, we've equaled it, so our names are in the history books now. And I said to those players last week, you've just written yourselves into history, you know, well done, because I wasn't here for the first three games, you know, they did that themselves. And and I'll say for the 17 I've been in charge, they've done it themselves, they really have. I've given them a platform, they're the ones who deserve the credit. So, you know, when we go up against Newport, we'd love to be able to come back unbeaten, you know, just because that's what I do away from home. It's brilliant to bring something home. Away from home is always good to bring something back. So that's the main reason, because we need points on the board. And the second reason is if we break that record, that would be a phenomenal achievement for any football club, you know, and that would be on the boys as well. Their names will go down in history, but for me, their names are going down well at the moment. Just want a result at Newport.
And our football reporter, Luke Cordell, has also been speaking to goalkeeper Glenn Morris.
If we could somehow get over the line and break a record, that's down, you know, forever. And you can't take that away from the boys and the group and everyone involved. But, you know, we've got a tough game first, and we won't be thinking of that during the game. It won't even come into our heads. We just want to make sure we get across the line and get the points.
You said you don't want to look too back too much, but 6 months ago, wasn't it, the last time you played at Newport? Three down after half an hour. A bit of a nightmare start, wasn't it? What was it like?
Yeah, it was a difficult game. It was a difficult night. It was a Tuesday night game, and one of those days where, if I remember, a few things just went against us, and it was like one of those days where everything went against us. I think they scored a good free kick, and there's a few things that just didn't go to plan, and before you know it, like you said, you're 3-0 down, and that can happen. And that's why we have to be relentless in what we do, because although you're on a good run and things are going okay, it can soon turn. And you can, I don't think it was that long ago that we was on a winless run here. Yeah. And you know, like that's, you know, I'm, you know, hoping that will never happen again, but you just have to make sure you, all of us are pulling in the right direction to stop that.
And you picked up another 1-0 weekend. I mean, you love a 1-0, don't you?
There's been a few, yeah. I mean, it's a great result for a goalie, that 1-0. But it's just testament to the boys. That, I mean, I didn't have a shot to save, I don't think, maybe one, but it was they're working so hard, and it is making my job a lot easier, and it's I'd rather that, definitely.
I think that was your fourth clean sheet of the season. It's probably the easiest one so far.
I think it was. Yeah, like I said, didn't have a lot to do, but. Yeah, you're just trying to talk the boys through it and making sure that they're, you know, keep working as hard as they was. And you could see that, you know, some of the boys like were cramping up at the end and stuff because the effort they're putting in. But we just got to keep it going.
Staying with football, and Kent-based London City Lionesses are back in action in the WSL tonight. They're still looking for their first win following defeats to Arsenal and Man United in their first two games of the season. They travel to take on Everton in a 7:30 kickoff. Athletics, and Kent's Dina Asher-Smith has qualified for the final of the 200 metres at the World Championships. The 29-year-old from Bromley came second in her semi by 0.21 of a second. On to cricket, and Kent's penultimate game of the season has ended in a draw in Leicester. Play against Leicestershire was disrupted by rain, and action on the final day had to be abandoned. The result means the hosts are promoted to Division 1. And finally, in ice hockey, the new season gets underway for Kent's Invicta Dynamos this weekend. They take on Chelmsford Chieftains at the ice rink in Gillingham tomorrow before heading to Streatham Red Hawks on Sunday. Club legend and all-time leading point scorer Andy Smith has come out of retirement to play for the Moes this season. Well, that's that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker and head to the What's On pages for info on everything going on in Kent over the weekend. Hope you have a fantastic couple of days. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.